And welcome to the Mirror Project. We are your hosts, Alexandra
and Christine,
and we are thrilled to have you with us. Today's episode is all about our dads because Father's Day is just around the corner. Get ready for a roller coaster of stories, from the funny and goofy moments to the growing pains that shaped our relationships. Christine will take us on a deeper journey as she asks me about the loss of my father and navigating the grief of losing a parent. Then I will return the favor and ask Christine about her experiences as the daughter of someone battling chronic health issues resulting in other medical complications. Grab your tissues and your popcorn, because this episode is going to be a mix of laughter, tears, and everything in between.
Before we delve into today's riveting topic, make sure to hit that like, subscribe, or follow button on your preferred listening platform. Take a moment to do it now before it slips your mind. Trust us, we're not getting started without you. Let's make this journey together.
So let's kick off the episode talking about dads and their daughters. So Christine, do you have any memories of your dad from when you were a little girl that just pop out in your memory?
Oh, well, there's so many of them. I had such a fun time reflecting back on all of this stuff. And sometimes it really just takes me back to that time. And I really wish I was a little girl again, but there's many. So one thing that comes to mind first, and my sisters and I still talk about and tease my dad about to this day, is when we were little, driving around with him in the car, just him and my sisters and I. My dad is really big into like 80s rock, AC/DC, Van Halen, Led Zeppelin, and we would love, he would rock out with us in the car. And the one song that my sisters and I fell absolutely in love with is called Hell's Bells by AC/DC. And for those who don't know, it starts off with these church bells ringing at the start of the track. And we were so little, we didn't necessarily understand what the song was about, but we loved the song. Like, the not only was with the bells, but like the guitar, the bass, it just was like, it's such a good track. I love it to this day. And we would always say when we were in the car with him, Daddy, play the bell song, Dad. And he would, and we would just have such a great time singing along, listening for those bells. I can't stop smiling for those who are listening, thinking about this. But that's one big one that comes to mind. But also, you know, going on fishing trips out on the ocean with my dad. One of the things he did with each of us was adventure guides, which was through the YMCA. Mm-hmm. And we would go on campouts together with my dad. It was just a father-daughter group, which we had such a blast doing. And it was nice because I had Girl Scouts with my mom and this with my dad. And another funny memory that, God bless my dad, when we would be playing up at my grandparents' house, they had a pool in the backyard in the summertime, and we'd all be hanging out in the pool. Dad would come in, and one of our favorite things to do was to jump off my dad's shoulders into the deep end. And he would do that over and over and over again with each of us. And he'd go under the water, let us climb up and stand on his shoulders. We'd hold his hands. He'd have his hands above his head, and then we'd launch ourselves off, and he would just do that over and over again. And gosh, I can't even imagine how sore he must have felt the next day having to endure that so many times. But yeah, you know, my dad, he just was a big old goofball. I just love thinking back on all of those times together. And as I got older and some of the lessons that he would teach when it comes to packing the car up, it's like a game of Tetris. He's like, it's all, family of five and four girls. There's a lot of luggage. So he'd always figure out a way to make it fit. And
everything has to fit just so the door will just close.
Yeah. And we'd be in this big old SUV, and before the time of, we didn't have a car that had like the TV in the seats that comes down from the ceiling, but he MacGyvered a way to hook up a laptop so we could watch DVDs. And we wouldn't, because we were using DVDs, we didn't need Wi-Fi, and he had like an outlet for the car for the laptop. so that the laptop could plug into the car. So yeah, he always is clever that way, still to this day is. And one of the things we always look forward to at the holidays is the dad gift, because it's always something, you know. I'm ready for any situation thanks to my dad. And it all started one Christmas, like the first Christmas after I had my license. And he, because he's so funny, he got himself, my mom and I, what we dubbed the Armageddon bag. Because he stocked it full of all essential things that you would need, and some crazy things that I didn't necessarily think one would need. And I'll share one more thing about this. He had me help him wrap these gifts that year. And he was like, "Christine, don't be peeking." And I was like, "Well, you told me not to." So I peeked.
Now I have to.
I peeked and I was like, "Why is there a hazmat suit?" I was like,
"You're really ready for anything.
What's going on?" And it's not actually a hazmat suit. It's like a rain gear, like pants and a coat. So like if you're stuck and it's torrentially pouring, you have protective gear. But yeah, that's just to give you an idea into my dad and the sense of humor he has. And he's always just been such a good sort of pillar in my life, him and my mom. Mm-hmm. They're such a great team. And I look back on my childhood and I'm really grateful to have him and my mom together. It's just really, really special. But enough about me, Alexandra. Let's hear about you and memories you have from when you were little.
So some of the things that came up was, I think our dads would have got along very well together because of the whole bag prep for the car thing. I don't think my dad went as far as you. Your dad went. I think he was like, just have a pair of like tennis shoes, a white towel, like if you had to put it in your window, you know, a jacket, an extra pair of socks or something.
And I will say, I still have that bag in my car to this day. So I am prepared.
Clearly for anything except for the situation which calls for hazmat. And you mentioned like dad's Christmas gifts. So mine actually went the other way. Every year I would try to find a kind of ridiculous gift for my dad. I was trying to think of one of the ones that we got was like a box of three different wooden 3D like puzzles, and he would just sit there and try to figure it out.
Yeah.
So I'd always get like one kind of like gag gift that was a little funny or a little kind of useless, just something. Yeah. I think there was a reindeer like head, and you squeeze it and it like shot out a little like a red nose ball for no other reason. I was like, I think this is a dad gift. So but from when I was young, one of the biggest things I remember is my dad really loved baseball. And in some ways, I was very much a daddy's girl. And I liked baseball, but I think I liked baseball because my dad liked it. Mm-hmm. And I remember I lost quite a few teeth at baseball games.
Oh.
I feel like when you're young enough to lose your teeth, like not like adult teeth, all my teeth are currently in my head.
Sure.
But I remember those giant frozen Toll House ice cream cookie sandwiches, the ones that were like the size of your head as a kid. And they would be so frozen, and I would have like a loose tooth and I like bite into it and like, hey, there's blood on my sandwich.
Oh,
and then my tooth would come out. But if it didn't come out in that, like he'd always help me when my tooth was falling out by taking a frozen paper towel and kind of like pulling it. We never did the door handle thing, which I was grateful
for,
like, the
string on
the tooth. And yeah, no, he would just use a frozen paper towel.
I wonder, was that just in the movies or was that a thing?
No, I think that was a thing. If you look on like YouTube, people were trying stupid stuff.
Okay. Of course. Of course it would be on YouTube.
In the early part of the internet, you know.
Sure.
Everyone put anything on YouTube. Not that they don't now, but like.
Yeah.
You look at some early days of YouTube and you're like,
what?
Ooh. What were people thinking? Like, we just had no shame. We're just like everything out here all the time.
Yep.
But yeah, he would play tennis with me. He would come to all my competitions for Taekwondo. But I always joke that my dad really, either, you know, obviously wanted me to do business. I've mentioned before with him wanting me to pursue an MBA or be an engineer, because he would give me like Tetris, like the game on Game Boy Tetris, mm-hmm. or, you know, Lincoln Logs and Tinker Toys. And he would sit there and build things with me, or he would encourage me to build, I don't know, they brought something in a house, like a crib or like a vacuum. And it was just like, okay, here, build it. And I was like, okay. So, you know, I did a lot of like handy stuff around the house with my dad. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because he always told me the classical saying of measure twice, cut once, which my dad did sometimes, but would rush through and then cut wrong and then spend half the day upset. Yeah. It was hilarious. Inevitably, like, it just, something would go funky.
Yeah. My dad would be known to say, do as I say, not as I do.
Not as I do.
Okay, Dad.
But one thing I really remember as like a little girl was my dad used to go on a lot of business trips, and I got really excited to help him pack, and he taught me how to pack. So like using the packing cubes and the folding, and then sometimes like, okay, honey, I'm going on a trip. Do you want to pack my suitcase for me? And I was enough of a OCD, anal retentive person to enjoy packing. So I'm like, okay, let's do it.
I can relate.
But as a right, it's kind of fun. It's a little soothing.
I love the initial.
If I'm not the one traveling.
Yeah, I love the initial pack. I hate packing at the end of a vacation because it never quite fits the way it went in the first time. Anyway.
I mean, true. But when, you know, my Simmy moved in, so I call her my sister, when we were all living together and she was in school and I was starting working, my dad would like to joke with us, like, who was the favorite daughter? And like, there was some time I would do something is like, oh, well, Alexandra's pulling ahead in points. And then I remember, I think Simmy wiped out the board. Like, I was just completely off the board at that point when she got Dad a man crate for Christmas, and it had its own tiny little crowbar. And I just remember him, like, he's like, I don't know how you're going to beat this. I just, she's the favorite now.
Oh, no.
So it was just one of the funny things. That's funny. You know, so one more thing. I will always remember, I was a kid, and at the time we were in California, and my dad was very almost fastidious about his car, right? Like, everything was clean in its place. Mm-hmm. There wasn't extra stuff, didn't like it to get dirty. And it must have been an evening, I think, during the summer, because we went for ice cream and my godmother was in the car, and he was very particular about like letting people have food in his car. Mm-hmm. Because he didn't want it to drop or spill. So usually we had to eat outside the car. But for some reason, he was have her ice cream in. And my godmother Sharon was sitting in the front seat. And she always loved pistachio ice cream. It was like that, like, bright green pistachio. And I don't know what happened. Either she was laughing, somebody said something. And her cone goes flying right into the car vent. And my dad never let her live it down. Never. So those are just some funny memories. Oh, no. So even now today, if I say, oh, you remember that pistachio ice cream, Sharon? And she's like, I can't believe you brought that up. So, you know.
She's like, well, I never know peace about this. Jesus.
Well, not now, because it's on a podcast.
That's very true. It will now live forever.
Yep. In the hearts and minds of those who listen.
Yep.
So that said, Christine, do you have any stories of growing pains from the transition of childhood memories and childhood dad-daughter relationship to more adult dad?
I mean, I'm sure nothing's really like sticking out, but I'm sure, you know, God bless my dad, being in a house full of women, my three sisters would, you know, we gang up and give him a run for his money. But sometimes we kid and say, like, Dad, you're more dramatic than us. But
he's just got to stay on par with you guys. He's got to compete. I
mean, yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, nothing specific. But how about you, Alexandra?
Okay, so was it one as an adult? But there, I think I've definitely mentioned on the podcast for those listening that there was a period of my life where my dad wasn't really around, not because he and my mom had problems. They were totally fine, but he was doing an MBA program, and that was evening and weekends. And I was young enough that he left for work before I got up in the morning. And after class, I was an early sleeper. I'm much more of a morning person now, as Christine can well attest to. I'm like, you know, 9 p.m. Okay, where's my bed? 10 out.
Although when I come to visit, you hold out as long as you can.
I do. And you start to see my eyes droop. Yeah.
And then she kindly lets me sleep in because she's up bright-eyed at 6, 7 a.m. And I'm like, don't even. Don't even knock on the door.
So, yeah. So there was a couple – there was that time. And it, his MBA program was probably, I want to say, at minimum 2, if not 3 years to do. And so, you know, I was – whatever age when he started it, and then 2, 3 years older when he finished, and he thought, oh, I'm just going to pick up with Alexander, like exactly where we left off. And I was like, oh, no, Dad, I am a different person now.
Yeah.
So there was this weird disconnect of relearning like who this person was and him going, who is my daughter now? Because he wanted to pick up. And I was like, well, sorry, sir, you haven't really been around. And like, now I'm just living life as, you know, a kid. And so kind of rediscovering that. And like, we had a couple rocky years of trying to like, you know, daddy-daughter dates, and it was just a miss. Mm. But we're like, Dad was like, why did you have me, like, why did we do this? And Dad would take me to a baseball game, and I would be like, why did you do this? I don't really like baseball anymore. Mm-hmm. But one last memory I remember so strongly about my dad, and it would kill me. Twice a year, he would do this to me. Once was like Christmas time. He would always want to go shopping. New Year's Eve. I mean, not New Year's, Christmas Eve. Mm. He'd wait to do all the Christmas shopping for my mom until Christmas Eve. So we were out at the stores Christmas Eve, and then we had to come home and wrap everything.
Yeah. My dad, we don't wait until Christmas Eve, but we usually set up a date where, like, him and I, it's dad and daughter date, and we go and do Christmas shopping together. But I can't imagine why, Dad? Why would you wait that long?
Why? And I was young, too. Like, this was and like maybe up until high school, and then college came around, and after moved to North Carolina, he'd be like, okay, I ordered this for your mom, or like, can you order this for your mom, and I'll just pay you, I'll tell mom to pay you back the money.
Oh my god.
And then, can you wrap it for me? And he's like, how's my little elf coming along with all the Christmas wrapping? I think 1 year I was like, that's it, I'm done. I think it was the year before he passed. I was like, elf is out of business. If you do not have your gifts in by the 10th of December, elf is out of it. You were on your own.
Damn, girl. That's an early deadline.
Because it would be the end. Because otherwise it would be the end of December. And he was like, can you just wrap one more present? And I'm like, no, wrap your own jinkin' presents. And then the other time was every year for my mom's birthday, because my mom's birthday is February 13th, right before Valentine's Day. And it was like the man had amnesia every single year and would like miraculously forget that it's right before Valentine's Day. He was like, oh, and it would be 2 weeks before. He's like, okay, where should I take your mother? I was like, you don't have a reservation? You know, when I was older. Mm-hmm. And he was like, no. He's like, you know, it's before Valentine's. I was like, Dad, depends on when Valentine's falls. Like, either people are celebrating before, on, or during, or after. You know, every year we do this. And I think at some point it just became tradition. Like, I don't think he continually forgot. I think it was just, this is our
thing. Have our annual discussion.
Yeah. Like, Dad, do you not already have a reservation? No. Okay. But yeah, those are the memories and the awkward transition of going, who are you trying to tell me what to do now? And he's like, who are you? You're not the kid I had a relationship with before. And, you know, what happened to the girl who loved baseball and would do this? And I was like, not baseball, but I did love to build things with my dad. You know, mm-hmm. Christmas would come around if it was, I don't know, an example of a bookshelf. I'd be like, all right, let's open it up and build it. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay.
Yeah. So,
funny enough, one last story.
Yeah.
Right before I went to college, we were out in New Jersey and we went to Home Depot and he got me a toolkit, mm-hmm. right? And it had all the things in it, had it all through college, mm-hmm. all through here. And then Simi moved down to Charlotte and she took it.
Aww.
I was like, I'm never going to see that kit again, but I'm glad it lives on.
Yeah.
Because like a piece of dad was to me.
There you go.
Like, it's going to, yep.
Yeah.
So now I need to find my own new tool set.
All right. Well, I can enlist my dad because he's set me and my sisters up. We're ready for anything. But yeah, it's so fun to look back on that time and
things that make you laugh.
Yeah, it just makes you feel good. It's fun to reminisce on stuff like that.
Craving more of our company?
Join the fun over on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Mere Project Pod. Dive deeper into our world and engage with us on a whole new level. Don't miss out on the excitement.
Why don't we transition a little bit into, this is a heavier section of this episode, but Alexandra, I know your father passed away a few years ago, and I think it's important that we talk about this together. So do you want to share the details with us about what happened?
Of course. You know, it's sad, and I still miss my dad quite a lot, but I enjoy getting to talk about him. So thank you for letting me do this.
Of course.
So my dad was James, and he died fairly young at 58 years old in July of 2022. And I know I've mentioned before, he passed a month to the day of me starting my MBA program. So that was very bittersweet. And he died of a heart attack, just a sudden onset heart attack. Later, we found out that the EMTs don't think that if had he had the heart attack in an ER, they don't know if he would have survived. So just very sudden. And the weird thing about that day was it was so normal. Looking back, there was a couple of out of the blue things, but, or like not, just not totally normal, but overall it was kind of a normal day. I remember being really upset about something, and I don't even remember what now at this point, but I was just not in a great mood. And my dad was like, okay, well, do you want to get ready? And mom and I are going to go, you know, I don't know, to Lowe's or something, Lowe's Hardware, and look at some stuff. Cause they were always just doing projects in the backyard, and they wanted to finish out some things and come grab lunch with them. And I was like, I didn't really want to, but I was like, okay, I'll go. And we went. It was a nice trip. We had Chick-fil-A for lunch because that's what my dad really wanted. And then we went back to the house, and I helped my dad take all these security cameras that he had spent months researching. Like, he loved to research things and then get it. And hopefully they worked. This one he just didn't really like. So he had put them all up the weekend before, and I was helping him take it down. And I thought it was odd later that my mom wasn't out helping us, because usually she would. And later she told me, she's like, yeah, I thought it was weird, but I was like, nah, I'm just going to do this, I don't know, paperwork or something she had to do. And, you know, it was a windy day, and it was a really tall ladder. Like, part of the house was very high off the ground, just the way it was graded and whatnot. And even our next door neighbor was like, oh, I was going to come over and help, but it looked like you had it. And so normal. And we came in. I remember my dad being slightly breathless, but all in all, things were fine. And then I was getting ready to go do something with some friends of mine. And so I know I've mentioned before that I am not Christian and I'm pagan. So quite a bit witchy and very into spirituality, metaphysics. So if you do not share those beliefs, that is totally okay for those of you listening. I just ask that you temporarily suspend disbelief for this next part of the story. I was getting ready to go to a spirit circle with some then friends. And during that, you like don't have your phones on you. You're in a completely dark room. Lights are all blacked out, just kind of very opening yourself up to sensory feelings. And remember, one of the people in the circle across from me, I don't remember who it was like, I think Anubis is here. Like the ancient Egyptian god of, not death, but kind of that role of the, not the gatekeeper, but kind of helping fairy souls. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And I have been told that I've had a past life in ancient Egypt. And I was like, you know, maybe that's for me. Cool. Just a thing of like, maybe do some more research into that. And then my hand starts twitching. And one of the people in the circle was a writer, liked to write. And so I said to that person, I was like, maybe this is for you, like you have to write. And that person's like, no, I'm not really feeling that, but maybe you should. So somebody grabbed me a pen and paper. And as I said, it was pitch dark, so I couldn't see anything. But like, I just let my hand move on the paper. And about after an hour, we close the circle, lights come on, we're all adjusting. I put down the paper, and somebody else was like, well, don't you want that? And I remember distinctly going, I don't want anything to do with it. I don't want to touch that paper. I don't want to see that paper. And come downstairs, see a bunch of phone calls from my mom. So I call her back, and she was like, honey, like, you got to come back. Or like, your cousin's going to come get you, something, you know. I was like, okay, mom, what's happening? And when she said my cousin was going to come get me, I was like, I kind of had a feeling like something not great had happened, but I thought it was somebody on my dad's side of the family. So I was like, why would my cousin come up here to get me just to go back down to like where they were? So I was like, I'll just drive. And she was like, no, just come to the house. If you're going to drive, just come to the house. And I was like, okay. So didn't know what was really going on. A little irritated at that point, sure, because I'm like, what's happening? Mm-hmm. And I pulled up and my cousins were there and, mm-hmm, and my mom met me at the driveway and she had a strange look on her face and like an ambulance was there. And yeah, she told me in a driveway and it was still one of the hardest. I just remember sitting down like in the passenger side of my car and going, my whole world has changed. And my mom was like, do you want to see him? Mm-hmm. And I asked my mom, do I want to see him? Because we'd have a lot of conversations about people dying. And, you know, I didn't grow up where a lot of our family members had passed away. And yeah, so seeing them, and I don't really love seeing people when they're involved, it doesn't look quite real to me. Yeah. And but I think I'd be okay. Right. And I don't love that, for me, that farce of
I don't either.
Imitation of life. Mm-hmm. So, but I think I'd be okay with seeing somebody who'd recently passed. Mm-hmm. And so I asked her, I was like, do I want to see him? And she's like, no, honey, he's past that point. And I was like, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I don't want to remember my dad that way. I'd rather remember him from earlier that day. Mm-hmm. And the hard thing was my sister Simi was studying abroad and my dad and mom dropped her off. She was in Amsterdam, I think a week or so before. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, we gotta tell Simi. And so I'm calling and Amsterdam was quite a few hours ahead of us. And I know she turns her phone off and do not disturb. So I was like, hey, Simi, when you wake up and get this, can you call me? And I just need to talk to you. And so, you know, it was a weird night that night. And I went to bed and I don't think Piper, my puppy, knew what was going on. She was really freaked out. The cat we had at the time was in total mourning.
Yeah.
I think she just totally disappeared and go to sleep, like slept in a pit, woke up, and I get a call from my sister and she's like so upbeat and peppy and she's like, hey, so yeah, it's going great and yeah, what's up? And I was like, Simi, where are you? And she's like, oh, I'm out taking a walk. I was like, okay, can you find a place to sit down? And she's like, ah, no, I'm just gonna stand, like, what's up? And I was like, no, I think you really need to find a place to sit. I just remember repeating that. And then I said, Dad's dead. And she just went, what? Like, just I could hear the shock through the phone. And I was like, I don't know how to handle this. So I'm like running downstairs and I was like grabbing mom. I was like, mom, Simi's on the phone. And I told her and I don't know what else to do. And I think that was probably, other than hearing my dad was dead, like that was the hardest part for me. So
yeah,
that was a lot of disbelief at the time.
Mm-hmm. I remember, I don't know when after that you spoke with Simi, I remember you calling me the next morning.
I think,
yeah.
Yeah, it was probably right after that.
Yeah, you called me and I was up visiting my sister at the time and I remember my phone going off and I think I texted you because I was like, can I call you back in a bit? And I think you left me a voicemail and I heard you on the voicemail and I was like, oh no, what's... And I got up and I went out into the living room of my sister's apartment and I called you and I remember being in total shock. I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean? What do you mean? Yeah. I couldn't fathom.
Very much like the brain couldn't, you know, it's like a computer kind of stuck on reload. It's like, what?
I don't understand. In that moment, I don't understand. Like, having someone suddenly pass has not been something I had experienced up until that point. So I was like, I don't because, you know, there was no pre-existing condition that we were aware of necessarily or that would cause something so drastic to happen. And I just remember my dad and my mom were also up visiting. And after we talked, I called my mom immediately and I was like, is dad there with you? And I shared the news with my parents and I just said, dad, I'm going to need to give you a really big hug when I see you. Yeah. I just was like, I was ready to drop everything and fly down to be with you and mom, but I didn't. I was like, I need to let them do what they need to do. And I just made it known, like, I'm here for whatever you need and I'm ready to come down.
That was so helpful.
Yeah. I mean, he was dad. He was like my second dad too. It was certainly earth shattering. And anyway, I'm just so grateful that we're able to talk about this and share this, and that you're
definitely.
I mean, if you're okay with it, can we maybe talk a little bit about how has the grieving process been like for you? And is it still ongoing? Like, what can you share with us on this?
Well, I think the first thing is, like, there's no one right way to grieve. And I think it's different for everyone. And I think I was expecting, like, all five stages of grief. Mm-hmm. But I never experienced the anger stage. Still haven't. I think I've kind of wondered at how sad it was. And I think I need to backtrack for a second.
Sure.
Because the spirit circled that piece of paper I didn't want to touch.
Yeah.
Later, connected with somebody in the group, and they're like, we looked at that paper after we had heard, because somebody else I knew and his family was at that spirit circle and ended up coming over.
Mm-hmm.
And she must have texted the group and said, hey, this is happening. And they said, you had written the word sorry. And if you turned it around, it spelled your dad's name. And so, like, my dad came to say goodbye, which was really sweet. And that makes sense why Anubis was there.
Yeah.
But I think because of that, and just the way I look at death and life, I was okay with that. It was just, it was a change. But I never experienced the anger of, like, you know, why is he gone? Like, he shouldn't be angry in that sense. And I think there was just deep, profound sadness. And at first, a lot of disbelief, like, no, I don't want my dad to be gone.
Sure. I'm sure it also feels it doesn't feel like he's gone. Like,
not for the first bit.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just kind of think of it as he's not gone, just not here in a physical, tangible form, but his soul is doing what his soul needs to do. And, like, I still get messages, whether it's a song on the radio or the thought that I'd be like, you know, certainly with my program, like, sometimes I feel like I get nudges of, like, hey, my dad's like, this is, you know, the right way to go, or the, you know, the answer, or, you know, on a project, this is the direction, take it. And I mean, a lot of sadness at first. And there's moments where it feels like he's been gone for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And then other days where he was just here. So a lot of sadness.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly all very understandable. And one of the things I've heard, actually, I think I first heard it shortly after this all happened, was that grief is all of the unexpressed love for the people who have passed that we're not able to share with them. But it's something that we keep. And
yeah,
it's such a beautiful way to look at something that is quite painful and that doesn't ever really go away. That it's just the love you have for them. So
I think one of the best images I saw about grief was, I think people have a misconception that grief gets easier or smaller over time. And it's not so much that the grief gets smaller, it's just the container that you have to hold it gets larger, and your ability to handle it, it's a lot easier.
I haven't heard it put quite that way before. Alrighty. Well, if you're comfortable with sharing, what have been some of the hardest moments for you since he passed away?
First day of classes was really kind of hard, because it was just like, you know, this was a shared dream I had with my dad. So
yeah,
that was really hard. sometimes I would call my dad on my drive home from work and just chat about the day, or if I needed help with an Excel function, I would just call my dad. And really, anytime, even if he was at work, he would stop and take my call. Or he's like, honey, can I call you back? Like, I'm in a meeting. And I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
So I think those were sometimes, still are, the hardest moments when I just want to call my dad and ask for advice. And my dad gave the best hugs.
He did.
Like, you knew you had been hugged.
Yeah.
Recently, I was just going through some stuff, and emotionally or just kind of feeling in a stuck place. And I just kept thinking, like, I really want one of Dad's hugs right now.
Yeah.
So those are the hardest moments. They kind of sneak up sometimes too, where it's like totally fine, and then out of the blue, I'm like, whoa, it's hit me again.
It's so interesting how grief evolves over time, because in the beginning, I feel like it's just persistent and ever, it's just with you every day, every minute, and every breath. But as time begins to pass and, you know, life continues to move on, it's like sense memories, like things that come to mind, and it just, you're just back there. And it's so immediate, so it's jarring sometimes.
The other hard part was Timmy's law school graduation.
Yeah.
And Dad wasn't there. And then I think my graduation is going to be a bit difficult for that. Mm-hmm. I've recently moved. And there was, even before Dad passed, he had a box of things of, you know, from his career and life that he wanted me to have, and some stuff he thought would be valuable that I could sell in the future. So I have a feeling going through that box is going to be a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
But I can put that off for a little bit longer.
Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, I don't know if it's hard to say if there'll be ever a moment when you're ready to do that, but the time will come.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, Alexandra, are there any lessons or values from your dad that you hold dear and try to live by now that he's no longer here with us? Should have known better too. Sorry, before you answer, to have tissues.
Right. I have got like no tissue box up here.
Yeah, too, that was a mistake. We even mentioned it.
We even warned people.
Why weren't we better prepared?
You know, there's, now that you asked me though, there's not something I'm thinking of that he said. It's more of just, he really loved people and took people's good things with their flaws. He also loved to laugh.
Yeah.
And I think, and smile. And in business, I mean, he taught me a lot about business and stuff. So all that kind of plays in my mind, and caring for the people who work for you, and that it's a responsibility to manage people, and that their welfare is in your hands. So there's a lot of that I think in terms of business. You know, if I'm interviewing for a job, he would always help me with my resume. So just kind of coming across professional, like I could go to him for anything. And so I just try to live by that example of, you know, the things that he held important to put a conscious effort into if I don't already. But he had, I think I have I'm smiling and I've got one dimple, and he had a dimple, and it was funny because like he could go from so serious, and then if he needed to get something and he wasn't particularly like male or female, but particularly it worked on females, like he could pull out that smile with that dimple and like everyone would fall at his feet. Just like, of
course.
Was
very, he was so charming.
He was. But that was something I learned. He's like, charm in doses, right? Like you don't want to overcharm people. Right. Like you want to think, you want to pull out the big guns when you need them. But to laugh and smile a lot. Yeah.
Of course.
And to measure twice, cut once. But don't do what he did.
Yeah. Oh, I'm curious if there's any advice you would give to someone who's recently lost their dad or a father figure or a loved one that's really close to them?
Not everyone, but a lot of people say some really useless stuff when you lose people that are close to you.
Yeah.
Either they don't know what to say, so then they just stick their foot in their mouth, which happens a lot, and just ignore those idiots, because they really are. Don't expect your grief process to be like anyone else's, and if it doesn't look like anyone else's, that's okay. You're not grieving wrong. You're just grieving in your own way. And do what you need to do to become okay with it, to hold on to the memories without holding so tight to the person that you don't move on.
Mm-hmm.
It's finding a different way forward. And you will have a bond with people who have also lost their parent. I had a coworker who lost her parent not long after my dad passed. And it's not the best bond to share with people, but it was easy to go to her and say, hey, I'm really missing, you know, my dad, and I know you understand what that's like.
Yeah.
And so for the first year, we would kind of check in on each other, which makes me now think I should go check on her tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's the best advice I can give to people, is just one day at a time. Yours does not have to look like anyone else. People don't know what to say.
Yeah. I certainly. I tried my best. But
oh, you were one of the people that suffered from the
I know. It's so, I reflect back on moments when you're in a situation of losing a loved one and you're, you know, people, they don't, I don't know. It's so funny. It's like, this is a part of life, but people don't know how to necessarily navigate or deal with it or know the best way to show up. And honestly, I think I look on the traditions of like the wake and the funeral, and I find that the wake isn't for the family. It's for the yeah. friends or the acquaintances or the other people. They come and they're there to essentially pay their respects, but I feel like it's for them, the people coming to that sort of service. And then, you know, my experiences as a cat growing up Catholic is like you go to the funeral mass, and I find like that and the burial is more for the family. It's more intimate, but it's just really interesting to see how people act in those situations.
I will say death does not seem to bring out the best behavior in my dad's side of the family.
Mm.
And I'm not really in any mood to get angry right now about some things, because that was...
No, I know how.
Yeah, not... Christine definitely knows what happened, and maybe one day I'll feel like recovering, recovering over that.
There's plenty of anger to go around. I'll say that. Yeah. And I wasn't there.
Not today. Yeah. Well, I don't know, but I think I called you like that because it was an evening the day after. And I was like, you will not believe what family can do.
I was like, all right, where you need me? I'm ready.
She's like, I'll bring the shovel.
I guess the last thing I want to ask you, Alexandra, is what are your hopes for the future in terms of your healing process here and how you're going to carry your dad with you forward?
I hope to not cry at my wedding.
I know.
Christine knows last year we went to my college roommate's wedding, and the father-daughter dance hit me. And I was not expecting it. In hindsight, I should have been like, let's think a little bit. Because my dad was a terrible dancer. And everyone, I do mean terrible. Like, he could not dance. Like, maybe some disco. But, like, that was about.
Oh, I would have loved to see you, Dad.
Hip shakes and a finger. Yeah, that was it.
Doing the electric slide.
But like, otherwise, not a good dancer. So the healing, I think it may not matter how much healing or time has passed. I think that is going to hit me. So haven't
met my person, so there's no wedding to plan. But I don't know if I would ask somebody who, like a male figure in my life, who's been like another dad or mm-hmm. hopefully my partner, his dad, or if I would just do a dance with my mom. So not sure yet, but I have a feeling that will come up.
Yeah.
And probably sharing stories about my dad mm-hmm. so my kids get to know him without knowing him.
Yeah. I think your mom talked about that, how she knew people, like her family talked about people who she never got to meet, but she feels like she knew them because the people who are still here kept that person's memory alive. And I think that's such a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt that you'll do that for your children. And
it'll definitely come through and lay out the instructions to build things and
yeah.
I teach my kids what to do. And funny enough, of my parents, they were the one I thought, like, as a grandparent who would spend a lot of time on Pinterest figuring out stuff to do with the grandkids, would have been my dad, not my mom. So
yeah,
but yeah, that's I think that's, it's always in waves, right? Like, and I think through going through different stages of life, there will be different parts and reasons why more than others that I miss my dad. So I just kind of rolling with it, not trying to stop an emotion or a feeling of sadness, but just kind of going, hey, you're here. Okay, let's roll with it. Mm. So I think that's really what my healing journey will look like.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I got your back always. We're in this together, friend. I walk by your side on this always.
Yeah. And I love you for it. Thank you.
I love you too.
Okay, now that we are both stuffed up and crying, why don't we turn the tables there, Christine, okay. and shine the spotlight on you?
Sure.
So I think you mentioned before that your dad's had a bit of a health journey. Do you want to share what he has before we kind of jump in more to what's been like?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I'd say the last... Oh, goodness. 6 years since I've... Yeah, 6 years or so. My dad's been on quite the journey. Different things. He had a partial knee replacement done. And then shortly thereafter, we discovered my dad had multiple tick-borne illnesses. The most notable one being Lyme, but there was many others. Bartonella was another. And this all was discovered... I can't quite recall when... But I think it's been at least 4 or 5 years since this discovery was found. And we believe he's actually been suffering and dealing with these illnesses for over a decade, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but it's so difficult for these illnesses to be detected, and you have to specifically test for them. So,
oh, wow.
Because they don't just show up on normal tests. Like, you have to have specific tests done. And it's been quite a journey for him. It's to the point where he has chronic Lyme disease and he'll be dealing with it for the rest of his life. But over the last several years, he's been undergoing treatment. At one point, he was on a course of treatment that was intravenous. He had a port put in his chest. Mm-hmm. I want to say for almost a year he had had that and was undergoing those treatments. And I remember how taxing that was for him. And God love my dad. He always underestimates surgeries and like the recovery time. And like the recommendation from the doctor was you can't live to above X amount of weight. Mm-hmm. He always Dad, if you're listening, stop pushing it.
Listen to the doctor.
But yeah, he for almost a year, maybe even over a year, can't quite recall. The details are a little fuzzy. He was undergoing intravenous treatment. Several doctors, constant tests were being done. And that was a very, very taxing time for him and for my mom and for me and my sisters. And unfortunately, at the end of it, it was discovered something was wrong. My dad knew something was wrong, but we didn't know what. And based on where he was feeling discomfort and issues. We were looking at his digestive tract and wasn't finding anything. And I remember I was down in Florida with my sister at the time when he was taken to like an emergency clinic, because also guys at the time were like a year into COVID. Like this was February 2021, like almost a year after COVID. So it wasn't easy for him to get the attention he needed. So he went to an emergency clinic and wasn't getting the answers he needed. And after we had come back and I was home, my sisters were home, and I can't quite recall where he got this diagnosis, but they found out that essentially a bacteria had started eating away at one of the heart, the valves of his heart. And it deteriorated significantly that he fell into a coma the night before he was about to undergo emergency heart surgery. And I, you know, my sisters and I were all home, so we were there for my mom to support her. But yeah, it's just, it was shocking that the treatment that was supposed to help my dad with the Lyme disease and the Bartonella and all the other tick-borne illnesses he was battling ended up, you know, hurting him in another way and causing some, you know, it was crazy, because you hear emergency open heart surgery and like that's serious surgery.
Yeah, that's nothing to sneeze at.
But I just remember someone also making the point, like, yes, that's a very significant surgery, but it's one that is done thousands of times. So it's a surgery that has a very high success rate and all these things. But it's still like, I didn't know what was going to happen. And my mom had to make some decisions for my dad because he wasn't able to make the decisions for himself. So my mom, as his advocate, had to do that. But, you know, me and my sisters were there. We supported her. Yeah. I kind of really gone deep in on it all. But that's kind of a little insight into all that's been happening.
I briefly started to touch on it, but how has the chronic Lyme disease and the other complications impacted your family dynamics?
It's forever changed. We're forever changed because of it. And it's something that I have learned so much about. There's still so much for me to learn, but this is truly something that, you know, yeah, it's affecting my dad. He lives with it. I'm not going to fully understand what he's experiencing, but we're all living it in some way. It affects all of us. Right. You know, I mean, he's still my dad, but there's parts of him that are different now.
Yeah.
So.
And in that, what aspect of your relationship has changed specifically for you?
For instance, like what's some of the lasting effects of chronic Lyme is, you know, cognitively he struggles, his memory, and he knows, like, when people are diagnosed with Alzheimer's or dementia, there's a certain point where they don't necessarily know consistently what's happening with them, but he is aware of that. So it's hard to see your parent go through that. I mean, as kids, your parents are superhuman. They're superheroes. They're infallible. they're indestructible. Yeah. But as you reach adulthood and your parents move into a different phase of their lives, you quickly learn that that's not the case. And I wasn't expecting this all to start when my dad, I mean, he's still a pretty young guy. I mean, he's 61.
I mean,
he was first
still very
young. Yeah, he was first diagnosed with all of this when he was in his late 50s. So it wasn't necessarily a phase, an era of life that I thought was going to start right now. I thought, oh, I had a little more time. And we all, you know, there's moments where my dad's still my dad, but there's a part of him that's now forever different. But it doesn't mean I love him any less. It's just our new normal. Sometimes I'm like, wow, I miss how life was before. But really, my dad's been living with this for over a decade, and it was before he didn't even have a diagnosis, and he was suffering from all of this. So in hindsight, we were like, yeah, that's, you know, why dad was slowly changing. It started to all add up and make sense. And so we're just finally all caught up now, and he's finally caught up. You know, our family dynamic, we're still super close. We're still
good.
We still have such a fun time, and you know, there's just certain things are a little different now, and that's okay. And that's just what it is.
So what, is there anything specific that you and your sisters and your mom have had to change about how you do things that have been adapted to support him in his journey through the chronic Lyme? Can you share a little bit of what that looked like the change?
Sure. So, well, when I was still living at home when this was all first happening and him doing the intravenous medication. So when that phase of this whole journey happened, so much changed. Like, my dad was using a different bathroom because he had to shower differently because of the port. The port couldn't get wet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, assisting him with administering the medication, like, my mom had to learn how to do all of that, and life just sort of changed a little bit. Dad wasn't able to lift heavy things. He couldn't exercise like how he was before this all started, and, you know, it just sort of all became the new normal. And today, I mean, he's doing very well. He's doing a lot better. We'll say that. I mean, it's something he's living with, but he's managing it. He's found support groups that he has become very active in. It's been a wonderful outlet for him. It's allowed him to connect with people who understand what he's going through, because us as his family, we will never truly understand it. And as a result, we've learned a lot, and there's still a lot left to learn. Lyme disease and tick-borne mm-hmm. illnesses in general is an area that is not heavily researched, but it is rapidly spreading because...
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. Bartonella that I mentioned, I believe, is known as cat scratch disease, but it is actually a tick-borne illness. And there's multiple. Like, Lyme isn't the only one. And they all affect the human body differently. And it blows my mind that this is honestly an epidemic. A lot of people consider this to be the increase and the rise of people suffering from Lyme disease and other tick-borne illnesses that go undiagnosed for some people their whole life. I mean, towards the end, before my grandfather passed away, we discovered he was suffering from Lyme disease. I mean, you know, like,
no.
People don't realize when they're bit by a tick, and they don't, for whatever reason, it doesn't then, I don't know why immediately it's not taken seriously as to, okay, you found a tick, we need to have it tested, you need to be tested, and we need to start undergoing the treatments needed. Because I think when it's caught early enough, measures can be taken to ensure a recovery from it. But left undiagnosed, that's when it becomes chronic, and your body... It's just your body is forever altered as a result.
Right. And I'm sure it's impacting his immune system.
Absolutely.
And how he fights other diseases.
Yep.
You know, it makes me think about...
It's also what made COVID so scary, because with the vaccinations, we didn't know how it was going to interact with his treatment. So, you know.
And if he had an open port, just, you know, anything that could have...
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes me think of when I take Piper to her veterinary doctor. I think there's two vaccines that she gets. One for wild animal urine, and then I think there's one for tick and Lyme. And it's so, maybe not Lyme disease, but like tick-borne things. Mm-hmm. And so I find that interesting, right? We do that for our dogs or our pets, and maybe that's because they're on four paws and close to the ground. But then we haven't done that
or figured out how to do that for humans.
Yeah.
It's, I find interesting, and
it's,
you know,
it is. And it's, I'm still, as I've mentioned, there's still a lot for me to learn, but as someone who's watched someone they love so much go through this, and it doesn't make sense to me. Like, this affects so many people, yeah. And a lot of people don't even know they're affected by it.
Well, it's so interesting because I really only learned more about tics moving to the East Coast, of like when I would go run with what I thought I would be a runner. Yes, Christine knows how laughable that was.
Well, but, I also tried, but I knew I would never be one. I just was there to be along on the ride.
Yeah, I remember when we went running with Kaylee and somebody else, and you guys were like, okay, like, now check your socks, shoes, you know, let's check you over for ticks, and check, you know, check the next person. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
What are you guys on?
I know.
And, but now it's, you know, it's something to take seriously, even if you're not just on the East Coast.
And if you are in the East Coast, just being aware, like the deer, they're now they've traveled far enough south. They travel the beach. Like the beach isn't even safe. Like, you need to be aware of the possibility that you might catch a tick while you're out at the beach. Always check your, you know, check yourself after you come in from a hike or a walk or working in the yard or out in the outdoors,
even just working in your backyard.
Yeah, my dad, for years before they hired people to help manage the lawn, every weekend in the spring and summer was out mowing the grass. And yeah, I it's really interesting talking to him about this. He remembers that one summer when he had quote-unquote summer flu, and looking back on that, that was a clear sign that he was suffering from the effects of being bitten by a tick. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, don't write that stuff off. And when you find that insect on you, like, take it seriously. And there's plenty of resources out there on the differences between, like, what ticks carry what. So just be aware of all of it. I mean, it's best to just better safe than sorry when it comes to a tick.
You briefly mentioned some support groups for your dad, in terms of talking to people who've been through something, helping mentally. Is there any other strategies or resources that you want to share with people who are listening in case they or they know are going through chronic Lyme disease or know somebody who is experiencing that has helped you and your family?
So, you know what? In our show notes, I'm going to list the specific organizations and things that I would recommend you guys looking into if you are someone who is in need of support. But also, there is also services out there for family members and loved ones who have a loved one experiencing this. So there is resources out there for you. And honestly, like, the biggest thing I want someone to take away from this is that they learn something new, and that this is an issue, and that you can, there's books out there, there's documentaries, just hopefully promoting better awareness of this issue and realizing the lasting effect it does have on people, because so many people do suffer from this when it becomes a chronic issue.
Definitely. I think that will be very helpful for people, and even for people who don't have a personal connection to the disease, to be aware of. Mm-hmm. All right, let's bring the focus back to you once more. Okay. How has your dad's illness influenced your outlook on life and your outlook on your own health?
Well, when something drastic happens to somebody you love, it's like kind of a reality check almost. It like snaps you back into your own body and realize it makes you realize, like, wow, this can happen to me, or to, like, it's happening to somebody I love. Like, a lot of people say, oh, I could never imagine something like that happening to me or someone I love. Well, so that's kind of how it initially impacted me. And I've taken from it is, like, life's too short to not take your health seriously. Like, you really, it really instilled in me the importance of being an advocate for yourself when it comes to your health. Like, yes, the doctors mm-hmm. have knowledge and the education and the experience, but they're not living in your body. So if you're suffering from something or something's not right and you're not finding people who are listening to you, keep searching, keep pushing. Don't just take what they're saying.
The first opinion. Yeah,
don't take the first opinion as gospel or the final say. Like, keep pushing because you know your body. And also, it makes you stop and think, like, how in tune am I with my body? And what can I do to better take care of my body?
I think we've talked about that on the show before, is and getting better in tune with our own bodies to listen. Because like you said, we the only ones living in our bodies, hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully there's nothing else living in our bodies. But I think we have that, whether it's been conditioned or we just have stopped listening to when our bodies are telling us things, or we think, oh, well, it's no big deal.
Right.
You know, really
yeah.
learning what the different signs of it, and actually learning, like, this is saying my body's okay, it's on its own recovery, but this is abnormal. Mm-hmm. It's so certainly important.
And I think the one other thing I'll say is, like, the biggest lesson I learned, one of the biggest lessons I've learned from all of this is, it's been a struggle watching someone I love go through something like this. So I don't want to ever, I want to do all I can to not necessarily put my loved ones in a similar position. So I do take my health seriously.
Exactly.
It's important for me to do my yearly checkup or go to the gynecologist and have my pap smear done. Like, all these things, you really got to be an active participant in your healthcare journey. That, like, it's not going to happen unless you do something about it.
And I would suggest one step further. It's also on the day-to-day of what food are you putting in your body? Are you drinking enough water? In terms of tick, are you checking your body to make sure nothing is stuck to it? Taking good care of your skin. I mean, it really could
be. I didn't even touch
just taking care of your body could be a whole time.
But, you know, my family has history of skin cancer. Like, that's a very important thing that I now am very cognizant of, like, putting sunscreen on even when it's – even in December, even when it's cloudy. Like, it's just my reality. It's what I'm predisposed
to. It's better to look silly than to end up with something.
Right.
You had mentioned family history. It's like, my dad's family does not have a great heart health history. And – he did have some blockages. Nothing that the doctor seemed overly concerned about, because I think otherwise he would have been in for surgery. But it was like, you need to get your diet and stuff in order. And he was working on that. Maybe. I love my dad. Loved my dad. Jill too. I wish he had taken better care of his health. Yeah. I think both Christine and I can say we wish our fathers had been more in tune with their body to listen to when things were going awry a little earlier.
My dad's there now. He takes his health very seriously.
Yes, yes, good.
Which I'm very grateful for. But, you know, it's...
You don't want to keep waiting. But yeah, if you know you have underlying family history with not even Lyme disease, but other stuff, mm-hmm. you should take your health seriously. It's something definitely not to be taken for granted for.
100%.
But I think my family doctor was like, I don't know why we called. Oh, we had to get a death certificate. Mm-hmm. Called her, and she was like, you're coming in for your... I was coming in for my annual anyways. And she's like, okay, you're also going to get a cardiac CT scan. Mm-hmm. And so she, because of my dad also saw the same practitioner, she was like, we're going to do this rundown. So it is very much, like you said, Christine, like, I don't ever want to put a family member I care about in the situation like that.
And that's why it's so...
To the extent it could be prevented.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to talk to your family members and get a family medical history. And then I understand that that's not the case for everybody. Mm-hmm. So I encourage you to talk to your doctors. Like, I really don't know. Is there anything we can do to... I'll take tests. I'll do... whatever mm-hmm. I need to. I want you and myself to have a full picture, so I know what I can, you know, within reason. You can't foresee everything, but
and you can't live your life in a bubble.
Right.
You have to live your life. So finding the tightrope of the best balance or something.
Exactly.
Between it all. Mm-hmm.
And
well, thank you for sharing that, Christine.
Yeah, absolutely. I encourage anybody who's listening who is struggling with a similar situation to reach out, we'll include some resources in the show notes and know that there are organizations and services out there for you. So you're not alone.
Certainly not. And you have both of us if you ever need us.
Absolutely.
We're here.
Yes. All right. And with that, I would like to thank you all for joining us on this heartfelt episode about our fathers, who we love so very, very much. We hope you found comfort, laughter, and maybe even a few tears as we've shared our personal stories, from the joyous memories of childhood to the challenging and transformative experiences of loss and illness. We appreciate you being a part of this intimate conversation. As we approach Father's Day, let's remember to cherish the time we have with our loved ones and hold close the memories of those we've lost. Whether you're celebrating with your dad, reflecting on his legacy, or supporting him through tough times, we hope this episode has resonated with you. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please let us know in the comments, and we encourage you to share with us your own stories. We'd love to hear how you honor and remember your dad. Oh, and don't forget to tune in next time for a lively and insightful ride as we contemplate the world of being misunderstood. We'll share our personal stories, from our journey as chronic people pleasers to a newfound outlook. Thanks so much, and chat soon.
Are you enjoying the banter and insights we're serving up? If so, consider tossing some support our way through our Buy Us a Coffee page. Every bit helps in fueling this passion project of ours. Find the link in our show notes and visit our Linktree. We are immensely grateful for your generosity. As we wrap up, remember to hit that like, subscribe, or follow button on your preferred platform. Until next time, let's keep the conversations going, and we'll catch you on the next episode.